Hello and welcome to episode 460 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. My name is Vince Hunt, and joining me as always is the creator of the comic series Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the man who puts the soul in the Costa Del, it's Tony Esmond.
Costa Del crime, baby. Couple of new faces here, my friend.
Put the soul in R. That's from our point.
That'd be better. That'd be more descriptive.
Welcome to the show, everyone. It's going to be another fun one this week. 460 as we edge ever
the
closer.
The road to 500.
The road to 500 has begun.
The boys
begun.
Have been edging all week.
We're not urban dictionarying this week, but what we are going to do, we're going to talk about some comics, and we're going to talk about a particular classic of the UK. We're going to have a little bit of a 2000 AD discussion, a light 2000 AD discussion.
Yes,
and
two guests.
We'll the first one will be up fairly shortly, and we were joined by Sue of Lawless Comic Con to talk about that great show and everything that you can come to expect there. So Dan was calling into the ether over and over, as he does in the shout outs.
The summoning ritual,
which takes a few months.
little bit creepy, but we'll go with it.
That's our MO on the show, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just stalk them.
Yeah. So there's going to be, we're just in a good mood. The sun has come out. This weekend in the UK, and Tony's out of the UK. That's not why me and Dan are happy, by the way. But
no, to be fair, when this comes out, I'll be back in the UK. So
yeah,
back nice. In the USSR. But yeah,
nice.
Been in the punch bowl. Sent you pictures of it, didn't I?
Yeah, which isn't a euphemism, but we are having fun this week. And do you know what else is fun? Reading comics via our wonderful sponsor, Global Comics, which is the... I'm just ignoring what Tony said, which should be a slogan on a T-shirt, to be honest. Yeah. But Global Comics is the place to go for digital comics. We love them. We love using this system as well. We use it all the time. And if you go to Global Comics, there's a huge library of titles available to read on their app from thousands of indie creators, hundreds of publishers like Image Boom, Tokyo Pop, TKO Studios, Sourcepoint Press, Mad Cave Comics, Humanoids, Ablaze, etc., to name but a few. And the catalogue is still growing all the time. Any particular highlights you've got this week, gents, you want to talk about?
Well, mine is connected to the upcoming secret guest we've got on the show.
Oh,
you've no doubt put in the show notes, Vince, so people will know. But the so mine is Requiem Vampire Knight, which you can read the first four volumes of on.
Great stuff.
Yeah. I also got this. Look, I got this from Pat today.
The French
version. I think it's volume 7.
Sacre bleu.
I tell you what,
that's great.
The French know how to print a book, mate. Man.
Yeah.
So good there.
Rubbish at wars, great at comics.
Bon dessiné.
But I need to read Requiem as well. What about you, Dan?
Well, as you know, I like to read. I love to read Global Comics on the train. So I was kind of going through, and I got a tap on the shoulder.
It's going to be filth.
Got a tap on the shoulder, turned around, and he meant Global Comics is all right, but the guided view is essentially just the same as they did on Comixology.
That's happened twice now.
Yeah, I was like, that's where you're wrong. That's where you're fucking wrong. And I said, on this latest update, now they do like highlighted panels, and it's kind of like darkened and lightened and moved around that way. So sit back down, mate. And he did. And
that is the best advert you've ever done. That's the best thing Dan has ever done in advert.
I keep on wanting to top it.
So attracted to him right now.
Me too. I'm flying home now just to see you.
It's not the only mention of Global Comics. I also managed to slip it in with Sue Hadra's interview. So, I didn't mean to come out rude. And
I didn't notice it.
That's what she said.
Oh, my God. She also said that you should check out Global Comics. With the app, not only can you read all of those, all the great comics available, such as Requiem and more, but you can follow creators, set reading status filters, and release notifications for books you're looking forward to checking out in the future. I quite like going through occasionally and adding loads of book to my library to read
all the time.
Later. So I can, yeah. My to read library. Yeah, yeah.
It's massive.
Yeah,
it's...
because there's so many comics being added all the time, I don't want to sort of miss out on, like, because otherwise if I forget to add it, it could get lost somewhere.
Yeah.
Because there's so many great comics to read there. And if you happen to be a creator yourself, you can publish your digital comics for free. They offer loads of great tools for indie creators to help with publishing, marketing, and more. Mm. So whether you're an avid comics reader like us, or you're a creator, or maybe you're someone new to the hobby, or someone who wants to get into comics, recommend them this. And Global Comics will just take off into the world of comics, which is brilliant. And you, for more information, you can check out Global Comics. That's comics with an X.com. Download the app now on Apple App Store or Google Play and start reading and publishing digital comics like never before.
Dan looks really innocent in his on screen now. What are you making out? You look like a really innocent little guy.
I've got like this kind of lamp on the go.
Yeah.
I said I can go behind me and I can look like kind of Jesus, messianic like.
Yeah, you're like East Grinstead's Jesus.
I think there's a few of them around already, T, down in East Grinstead. So.
Wow. So the moment the sponsorship ad finished, it just went.
I just thought he looked lovely and innocent in his picture.
He always looks lovely and innocent. We give him hell, thanks. But he's the baby face assassin.
Like Damien did in Omen 1.
Yeah, he did. Be careful when you get your double glazing done, Tony, just in case.
I saw an advert the other day.
Don't get a nanny.
They're doing like an Omen prequel. So,
I've heard that's good. Somebody was saying a line that's really good.
Really?
I want to see it.
Look.
Oh, look, he's looked pissed off now. He's angry now. Look, now he's evil.
You can't trust people online. Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. But yes, this week we're.
It's putting a curse on me.
with Lawless coming up in just over a month. Where we're getting excited, and it's time to get, you know, there's lots of 2000 AD stuff to get excited about.
I'm going to tell Sue to get a pass for Damien Butcher. That's what I'm going to say. Sorry, Vince.
Beelzebub has Mordius. That should be your ringtone, Dan. So 2000 AD, of course, we thought we've talked about it a little bit over the years. We were very pleased to go to the 40th back in the day, and
we talk about the 50th, don't we? Yeah, coming up.
We've had many creators who have been involved with the
friends
comic, or perhaps they've been on the show and now they're writing for it as well, which is good to see some names that we're friends of the show.
I think John Locke's about to write a comic, isn't he? Or something.
Yeah.
Future Shock, is that right?
Yeah, which is cool to see. So, you know, it's a staple part of the UK comics scene. So we thought we'd just shine a light on it a little bit, but it comes with a little bit of a, not a warning, what would we say, a statement up front. What's the word that's completely left my brain right now?
We just want to say it.
Yeah, bums. That's what it is, Tony. Yes, that's exactly what it is.
Bum fun. Well, they are fun.
They are. Oh, God. Now, no, seriously. 2000 AD.
Yeah, no, seriously, because that's what we're all about.
That's why people tune into this show. For this absolute nonsense. But if you don't know what... I mean, there are a few people around the world. I mean, I know we're a UK comics show.
A lot of people in the US listen to us. Who's the dude in Japan? He's a nice dude.
We're very lucky to have some people from around the world. Now, being part of the UK scene, it's kind of a given that people think everyone knows what 2000 AD is.
Yeah.
Right? Which I kind of take umbrage with anyway, because not everyone has to know everything. You know, it's lovely discovering things. And certainly, I know very little about a lot of stuff. And 2000 AD, for instance, I've probably...
You're very knowledgeable about 2000 AD because you once sat on a panel at Nottingham as an expert of 2000 AD, and I interviewed you about it.
It was a sham. It was an absolute sham.
It was a weird panel, didn't we?
We had one bloke dropped out, and you had to fill in.
We had one bloke talking about Jesus. your saviour. And then we had Vince. I said, what do you like about 2000 AD? And what did you say, Vince?
I like Rogue Trooper.
Yeah, it's not a lie, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I have, you know, discovered and learned more about, and even before then, in the past, I had read some issues of 2000 AD.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I was no stranger to these characters, and, you know, I don't have knowledge of, like, the big storylines, like a lot of you guys do. I mean, I know before the show was going, you were talking about particular Dread storylines you liked and stuff like that. I personally wasn't so much a Dread guy. I liked some of the other stuff in there. I mean, Dread, the amount of times I drew Judge Dredd was a bit ridiculous.
Draw him at that festival we went to? Do you remember the bit of paper came around that all the artists had drawn on, and you had to draw it, and you're like, oh, fuck me, I've had about 8 pints, I can't do this. And then you drew Dredd, didn't you?
Yeah.
Eight pints? Half a pint would have put me on the back. Yeah. But, but of course, like, 2000 AD is amazing. And for those that don't know, now, Dan Butcher, he did a hell of a document about 2000 AD.
He did. That's which we cut down because we're going
to skip over.
But it was a beautiful document.
Yeah. So, to give us, for those international listeners who probably know the word, the name, you've certainly heard of a lot of the characters, but what is this publication? To kick us off, Dan, like, what is 2000 AD?
Well, it was originally first published in February 1977, the year of my birth. And that's when it kind of like was unleashed on the public at large. I've got to say, I don't know about you guys, I wasn't a reader till secondary school.
Until I was about to say, until you were two, because if it launched,
yeah,
he was there for the first issue.
When did you kind of like, I guess it's like it launched so many kind of characters and creators that we sort of know and love. We've got, just for a quick shout out of characters, we've got ABC Warriors, Halo Jones, Nemesis the Warlock, Stronium Dog, Road Trooper, and Chopper. There's one for Kieran in there. And creators wise, we're looking at like Alan Moore, Peter Milligan, Grant Morrison, Jamie Delano, Neil Gaiman, artists such as Simon Bisley, Brian Talbot, Alan Davis, David Gibbons, and on and on and on.
It's a difficult one to name everyone because there's so many writers and artists in there.
You'd be on it for fucking ever. There's loads.
So we're basically picking a couple of favourites, aren't we, today?
Just grabbing a sort of snatch. But if you want more, there's like a great documentary. God, what's that called?
Future Shock, the story of 2000 AD.
There's an extended version of it on Blu-ray, isn't there? You can get this. Actually, a longer one than the one I think we watched it, Vince, when you came over my house that time.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah. And I
was that the night of the 40th?
No, that was it. That? I don't think that. So. I
it was on a con, I'm sure.
I think that might have been London Super Comic Con or MCM.
Of course.
I think Pat will remember signs up for telling people to fuck off at the end, which was
that's
their memory. Yeah.
Great.
So Future Shock, the story of 2000 AD, is fantastic because after watching it with Tony, I since bought a copy. You know, I got a Blu-ray of it, and I've watched it again. It's like in terms of documentaries, just really well put together. Really concise.
And the kind of it's one for the layman can kind of watch it, and get it. You don't have to be like
I almost think that, you know, while we try and spread ourselves a lot of it across a lot of areas of comics, 2000 AD for some fans is a hobby on its own.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of tutors, they call them. It's like they're just into that, and anything connected to that. But they wouldn't necessarily, read, I don't know, John Wagner's Batman, for example.
No, I agree. Like
they would,
Like 2000 AD is their kind of thing.
But more power to them.
Which is also an interesting thing, isn't it? Because a lot of these days, a lot of readers follow the creators, don't they? You like them. You like Hickman when he wrote the X-Men, and all of a sudden you're following his book that he's doing with Image, or you're following. You know, people
do a
lot
of that.
Following
the title anymore because they only lost about 10 issues.
Yeah.
So you're better off following a creator, like, aren't you?
How much follow through do you think that some of these 2000 AD like Wagner, Grant, and stuff?
I think some of the big names will buy everything they do. Sometimes I think, like, for example, Pat, John, Alan Grant. You know, all the big artists like Brendan McCarthy, for example. I first saw him in, I'm going to say ABC Warriors, maybe, and then I will buy everything else he's done because I just loved his. And he's changed; his style changes to and fro. But, you know, Brian Talbot, for example, a lot of people will have seen Brian Talbot doing Nemesis, but they'll follow him through to all of the Bond Destiny books that he does, or the biographical books he does with his wife and stuff like that. I think it really is a thing. I think it's such a landing space for creators to be in, sort of jump off elsewhere, as a lot of them did when they went to the States, you know.
Yeah.
It's got such a legacy, isn't it, that certainly...
big time.
Much like, you know, the American counterparts of Marvel and DC, that, you know, the legacy was so strong that it's still being mined to this day. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The characters are so strong. And I think it's why it's one of the guiding lights of UK comics, because, you know, as much as we loved all the weeklies, and you can talk about, you know, your Dan Dares and stuff. I know Dan Dares is an absolute classic. We could probably do a show on stuff like that in the future. But, you know, you can run off a list of some 2000 AD stuff that has gone beyond into other media, or, you know, the name just rings true, whether it be video games, novels, audio plays. I know that's a big thing now, isn't it?
The audio plays. Yeah, I literally was talking about the Nemesis of Warlock Audible book today with Pat. And we were talking about how, you know, how it worked out, because they do the first four books. But people forget things about the 2000 AD. For example, Dice Man was a gaming thing. We had they serialized A Life Less Ordinary and Shaun of the Dead, two movies in their comic, in the weekly. You know, there's
the Slayer, lest we forget.
From the same company. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's a lot going on with 2000 AD that people, oh, yeah, they did that. You know, it's a bit like that. And I think there's a few 90s years that are considered sort of slightly fallow in relation to their work. And there's a lot of characters. I'll tell you what's really interesting recently is one of my favourite Mega City book clubs is the Big Dave episode
that
Damon did recently, which is sort of quite... It divides fans, Big Dave.
Right, okay.
It's a really interesting case study.
Again, if you want kind of like the 2000 AD fix, Mega City.
Mega City.
Yeah, it's great. That's a deep dive into it.
And each episode kind of focuses on titles, characters.
With a connection to British comics. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of 2000 AD.
Now we're going to get into like just a couple of characters we like. And my one's going to tie in to a question I'm going to ask now.
Okay.
Which will be, before we get stuck into that, for people who are like, oh, I've always wanted to check this out, you know, where do I start? And I think, obviously, because we're talking about, you know, there's so many collections of things now, isn't there, that you can get to know a character through so many different ways with 2000 AD, can't you?
Yeah, definitely.
So do you think it's we always talk about, I'm going to get the joke here, we always talk about easy access.
back to my subject from earlier.
But accessibility in comics, especially for new readers, is so vital for like long term running comics. You know, the only reason, like a Spider-Man or a Judge Dredd or a Superman, people keep coming to them is because they kind of know where they are, don't they? They feel comfortable with that. So 2000 AD. What's, do you think it's an accessible universe for new readers?
It's funny, when I think certainly the classics are.
A lot of them
are one-off Dread stories and two-off Dread stories and stuff. But
you can just pick up like the Case Files 1 book and the Strontium Dog book 1, and you can kind of be straight in there. Like I said, maybe when it gets a bit longer, the further along the timeline, you're going to maybe have a bit more of an issue jumping in.
I mean, it's certainly major in terms of if you as a reader love post-apocalyptic style sci-fi, because it's mostly sci-fi is what we're talking, isn't it? 2000 AD.
Some fantasy.
But you know, if I think about it, even if they're sort of alien worlds, because of the UK feel of it, it felt like they were the ones that did that sort of post-apocalyptic. Desert planets, desert worlds, you know, these...
Oh, Cursed Earth, mate. It's classic.
Cursed Earth, you know, is the real... They're the first ones that really refined that, I think, in comics.
Yeah. I think, and knowing what the one you're about to talk about, Vince, but I think in general terms, there is a lot of 2000 AD material that is same writer, same artist.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important and a nice, consistent way. You know... Some of them jump about, but they do have distinct. For example, Slane is almost like distinctive by the different artists' stories, but it's the same artist for the story. But stuff like Robo Hunter, you know, nearly always. I think it was the original, the Golden Age run, as I call it, was Ian Gibson. You know, Halo Jones, Ian Gibson. You know, there's all these sort of things like there's, but there's, I think that's Ace Trucking, for example, Massimo Bilardinelli. There's these characters who are easily accessible because you're used to the style. It's like
DR and Quinch.
Yeah. Alan Davis and Alan Moore.
Davis is that to me. It is distilled Alan Davis.
I think that's important. I think that's really important for comic readers. If you're jumping into something, is everything you look at is the same, because there's a different personality to a story if it's a different artist sometimes.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Is it because these creators were given, you know, they had the opportunity to truly collaborate and make things their own, you know, because there was always a...
Well, that's a big issue, isn't it? The whole sort of work for hire thing with 2008.
It wasn't so much like you're given this character. You come up with a character with your artist or whatever, and then you make your story. Do you know what I mean?
It's supposed to this. I mean, creatively. Never mind the murky world of publishing and rights and stuff like that. But creatively, it felt like, or feels like, a lot of creators work on these things together. More so. I mean, even if it is sort of work for hire, there was a certain passion and sort of real
creativity. Zenith's like that. There's a few that are like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Zenith is certainly a good example of that.
Yeah.
Did you want to talk about yours, V? Because that kind of leads into...
I think for new readers, and a good example of this for me is, even though I say, oh, I like Rogue Trooper, and like I've read some stuff for Rogue Trooper, but it's another one that after this, I want to go into a deep dive and sort of like, you know, just start at the beginning and...
Where are you going to yours? Rogue Trooper, I always kind of, I feel like there's a parallel that can be drawn between Rogue Trooper and Silver Surfer. It's like a Zen-like warrior, running Ronin warrior type, kind of going around and getting into stuff. Do you know what I mean? And
so there's a lonely element to it.
Yeah. Rogue's got, like, he's got that going on. Go on, let's go back to
it. I mean, certainly things like that, when people are going to know about these things because they get adapted, and certainly Rogue Trooper is the next one that they're developing. We hope it's developing. But if it does arrive by some miracle, who knows what happens with these things? But there will be, and it is a small percentage, I know, but there'll be 1-2% of people that'll be like, "Where can I get more of this? I didn't know this existed."
Hopefully, again. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the good thing about Rogue Trooper is Garth Ennis has just done a series on it. He's just brought it back.
Fantastic.
And I think, hasn't he announced that he's doing another one? I think that's right.
Yes,
so
I think.
Going back to do another one.
Yeah, did he talk about it?
I mean, we talked on mic or off mic. yeah. I think there's a likelihood that he will go back to it. Yeah, put it that way.
I did read a Rogue Trooper story just the other day when there's a classic one when he's traveling around with that nurse. Do you remember that one? He rescues a nurse and they're getting up to adventures. He keeps saving her. And in the end, he starts feeling ill and fucked. And basically, she's working for the enemy, and she's been traveling around with him, injecting him with all this stuff, trying to poison him. And eventually, she kind of finds ones that works.
That is a metaphor for marriage.
Yeah. I'm glad someone was brave enough to say it to you, and I knew it'd be you. Yeah. Finally. but in the end, he stitches her up and she gets killed. So
he stitches her up. She's meant to do that to him, right? Cool.
Yeah. So, we've already started with Rogue Trooper, but my one was actually I had a big volume of the first Strontium Dog.
Do you have the black and white phone book one? Did you?
Yeah, I actually got from a Lawless back in the day.
Nice.
It was signed by John Wagner to whoever was just getting rid of it second hand. But it just says "Too Fat Boy," and I feel
classic
like
Wagner.
Even though he signed it in 2011, I feel like he's signing it towards me.
So my name's John.
Just
take it, fat boy.
My name's Barbara.
Yeah, skinny goggles, four eyes.
And this, the one I've got.
I see a new signing technique coming up next time we've got a table. Yeah. Usually I used to write Vince Blows Goats on the comics. You remember I used to write that for a laugh? Yeah,
you did laugh. Anyway, Strontium Dog, which is the Search and Destroy Agency Files, which is a little phone book sized digest. A nice wedge of a book, this one. Are they still available? Are they still openly available?
Some of them are. Some of them are, yeah. But some of them are quite pricey, actually, if you try and search them out.
Right.
They're available on Kindle.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
And, you know, we had an episode of, you know, you can go back and hear my in-deep thoughts about the book. I've forgotten what episode that was. We need to put that in the show notes or something.
Yeah.
When I sort of discovered this. But this was a case of, I had heard of the character. Let's start at the beginning and see it. See if I can get used to it. And it was just a joy, just an absolute joy. Obviously, this book was written by John Wagner and Alan Grant, by Carlos Esquerra and Brendan McCarthy, Ian Gibson, and Keith Page. So that's quite a nice collection of.
Man, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And black and white artwork, which is totally my jam now. I think I'm moving more and more fully.
Carlos looks really good in black and white, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Even when they've got those sort of tones, you know, even if it was a full color page when it was printed, it just looks lovely when it was black and white.
The quality of his line, I just find so interesting. His outline. Yeah. And that dotted outline.
Yeah, right? That's strange. I never could understand that when I was a kid. But it works. It's a real signature.
Yeah.
It completely stuck out. It is obviously, you know, this is, as I was just speaking about, a world devastated by nuclear holocaust. So, and obviously the survivors rebuilt, but many were warped by the mutating effects of strontium 90 fallout, unable to live or work amongst the norms, which is what I call a lot of people. These mutants were forced to grow up in ghettos and take the only job known to them. Bounty hunting. Yeah, Strontium Dog is about search and destroy agents who hunt criminals too dangerous for the Galactic Crime Commission to go after. And this series follows one such Strontium Dog. So even though it's called Strontium Dog, the character's name isn't Strontium Dog. He just is a Strontium Dog. His name is Johnny Alpha. Lovely hair. Lovely hair, Johnny Alpha.
You know, kind of like the X-Men, like Scott Summers could quite easily live a normal life. Like, I feel like Johnny Alpha, he stuck a pair of sunglasses on. He could kind
of all of them, you know, some of them got like a leg on their head and stuff like that, haven't they?
Yeah, like I've got a fucking face like, on a knee. Polo for a face and shit like that. And it's like, you're never bossing for a fucking...
Johnny Alpha, who obviously looks badass and really cool, great.
Yeah.
A great design, you don't need to... I think that's what a lot of things about the 2000 AD characters, which has stood up, is the costumes have evolved a little bit, but the designs were always so strong to begin with that you just don't mess with it over the years, and I think Strontium Dog was one of those.
Did you always envisage him as like in Clint Eastwood Man With No Name kind of?
I always kind of compared him to Dredd. I don't know, there's that famous encounter between them, isn't there? But they seem similar to me.
Johnny Alpha has he's obviously his mutant ability is his eyes emit piercing alpha rays and enable him to see through solid objects and into men's minds. That's a dangerous place to go, Johnny. Be careful what you do.
It'd be great being able to see through clothes and stuff, wouldn't it?
Yeah. And he has a Norm Viking partner, Wolf Sternhammer, and alien medic the Gronk. The Gronk was something that I wasn't really.
Was having a heart attacks.
I didn't really know about the Gronk when I started reading this book. So, and that is one of the beautiful things about when you discover things, because I knew the look of Johnny Alpha and obviously Wolf, but
didn't know about the Gronk.
I didn't know about the Gronk. So that was a experiencing that story and that introduction was lovely as it went on. But it is also a great comic of like all these different gadgets and all these different weapons and taking down the bad guys. They are literally just taking down absolute bad guys. There's little wonderful little mini stories because it was episodic. They were telling like an ongoing story of like, and it was the oppression of these mutant people. Wherever he goes, he is treated like absolute shit, even though he's there to help people. You know, it's that classic.
Like us, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm going to say that I'm going to speak for a lot of people here, that because when you have a 40 or to 50 year legacy of these characters, when you think about reading them at any point, but probably at the beginning, it is a little bit scary. It's a little bit daunting because you just think, I'm going to be completely lost.
Yeah, there's
40 plus years of history here. I don't know. Am I going to be completely lost? The joy of this story was like, from page one, I was in it. Do you know what I mean?
I think Johnny, the same as Dredd, and a couple of others, are easy to jump in on.
Yeah,
those are OG characters. Some of them. I mean, you could jump into Dredd today, not knowing what was going on.
Yeah,
and just be part of it. And yeah. I think Johnny was a bit like that because it tended to be stories, didn't it?
Yeah,
they might be 5 or 6 issues long.
Each one was a different contract, wasn't it?
Yeah, like the Hitler one and all that sort of thing. Yeah, yeah. But I think mostly, I think they're okay. There's a couple that. I'd say go back and read, like Nemesis. I think if you're going to jump, if they were still printing Nemesis now, I'd say go back and read it from the start because you're missing it so much.
Yeah, you have to.
But I think there's some of them are just like the new Slain Trade or the newest Slain Trade. You can go and read that without needing to.
Yeah, And that's
I think some of the newer,
the
newer stories like Brink and some of that stuff. I would say probably a little bit overcomplicated. Okay. You'd need to go and buy the trades. But then again, we are in a world where they are available. Even progs are available.
Yeah.
Back when we were reading, when I was reading it, I think I started on annual one. So it was the first year when the annual came out, but I wasn't on the prog at that point. You could just jump in and read it any week after week. It was easy then.
Even in that trade you got, Vince, like if you just started another chapter in the middle of the book, it does the whole give you a brief explanation of what's happening in the story.
Yeah, they do that Stanley Jim Shooter thing, don't they?
Yeah.
Where they explain the powers of Johnny Alpha every time he does it almost, Or like, it's like the Lawgiver, isn't it? The gun that Dredd's got. They kind of explain it every time he fires it and things like that.
That one fucking weapon that Johnny Alpha has, I can't remember the thing, but it's like that time grenade
when
he throws people.
That's so good.
The fucking the world carries on like going around its orbit and they reappear like later.
One of the best ones was like he had to deal with this bad guy and he threw a they were on a spaceship, like moving through space or whatever, and he threw it and it froze, it sort of created a bubble around this guy that sort of froze time, like took him out of time and then popped him back exactly where he was, but where he was in the middle of space because the ship had moved.
Yeah.
And just absolutely like, just took dead. Him
it's
out.
So cold. Yeah. I fucking loved it.
There's a great story in Dog Breath, which is the fanzine about him, where he kills Jamie Oliver.
Oh wow,
that's a good one.
Yeah, wow. That sounds great.
Time would have been a lot different then.
Or because he's called in the comic Jamie Bolivar. I believe some clever writer twisted it slightly.
Nice. Yeah, so Strontium Dog is a big recommend for me for those. And you don't always see him so much apart from, like, he's a big fan favourite. But am I right in thinking that he's not around
him
that.
Now?
No, not seeing him now. So, but there's a wealth of stuff to look
so
up.
Much.
Yeah. So that's my one, the recommend. Strontium Dog's a good one. What about you guys?
I was going to mention like a storyline, and we mentioned it briefly will come on. It's a Dredd one, and it's a block war going into the invasion of the Sovs, which was just when I didn't read it at the time, but I think it was in trades or like, you know, used to do like specials and they'd get like a print and it'd be a collection.
Best of 2008,
And one got like just a massive storyline of like the block war, which is people kind of not accustomed to the storyline. If you've seen the films, you kind of pretty much know that the huge, massive towers in Mega City 1 where they're full of people jammed together. And one block has a grievance with another block. And before you know it, there's like a massive gang war and they're fucking throwing shit and shooting guns across at one another. The story on this, I think there's a Sov agent, Orlov, wasn't it? And he was poisoning the water supply or something to make people even more irrational. So Mega City 1 was kind of tearing itself up. And then the Sovs invaded. So you go from this massive thing of the cities full of riots to Judge Dredd being the sort of the spearhead of the judges fighting back against the invaded Soviets. And it was just like, man, these fucking stories, like one massive event going into another.
Yeah, that was the longest running event, I think.
Yeah.
Up to that point. I was reading it in weeklies at that moment. At that point, I fucking loved it. They've kind of revisited it recently as well, maybe a couple of years ago. Yeah, and gone back and filled in a couple of the blanks and holes and stuff going on. Well, but it's incredible. Yeah. And the Carlos stuff. I remember when Carlos sadly passed, Eamon came round at Thought Bubble and asked everyone, what's your favourite Carlos moment? And mine was those big Soviet spaceships coming over. Mega yeah. City in that story. Just beautiful. Yeah, incredible.
I can also remember that scene where there's Dredd and they broke. What are the guns they have? There's like the really temperamental laser guns.
I can't remember. Yeah, I know what you
stub
mean.
Guns or something.
Stub guns. Yeah, that yeah. Might be. Yeah, yeah.
And they got the propensity to kind of overload and backfire, but they're absolutely lethal. And then like a couple of the good judges say, "Good, get taken out like using them," and it's kind of like risking everything to kind of get a win for Mega City. It's amazing. Loved it.
Yeah, really good. Yeah.
Is this something that is? You can just jump in and just read that and you totally... Yeah. It immediately sets up the... Yeah.
It's a weird one, that, because it's almost a heroic story.
Yeah, it is.
Where a lot of other Dredd almost makes Dredd look like, you know, the fascist that, you know, possibly is. But I think there's a lot of narratives you see by 2008, but they go, oh, no, Dredd's a villain. And he is a lot of the time, you know, he is. But in that one, he was almost... He does some terrible things in that story, incidentally. Yeah. But there are moments in it where he does heroic stuff as well. You know, I think that's what I like him so much. It's those facets to him.
Yeah, he's kind of, there is at that heart, he's kind of, because he's in that kind of where he is, he has to be the man he is. And he sometimes does, well, what we would say morally dubious, but framed in where he is and what the world's like, you can kind of like, there's the debate around it. That's the whole thing. That's what's interesting about the character.
Yeah. But this was also, you know, going out in a weekly comic that kids and teenagers were reading.
Yeah,
well,
I know.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
yeah.
You know,
that's great to be presented with that kind of stuff. I kind of like that storytelling that kind of pushes stuff forward and this kind of taking chances and things change. And that's one of the things about Dredd. It constantly rolls forward, doesn't it? And it's not just doing the Simpsons thing, to resetting it back to the start of an episode every new storyline. Things have changed. That one you gave me, the case file is more recent.
Right.
Like some horrific apocalypse had happened and like millions and millions of people had died. I think it was like the same to do with the Dark Judges. Mm. And I was like, oh, okay, fucking hell. It's
such a horrible place to live, isn't it?
Mega City? Yeah, awful. Yeah. Awful.
That's the point of it, isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
I was trying to find an old 2000 AD annual, and there's a quiz there. Of like, you're going to visit Mega City 1 for the day, and you got an optional choice thing.
And it's like, it'll be, oh no, you've died.
It's like someone comes up to you and says, "I've got this cheap watch. What do you want to buy it?"
Ice Cube. Yeah.
You got to tell a judge. Got to tell a judge.
All right, you grass.
Yeah, you even fucking talk to him when you're doing like 10 in the Ice Cube.
Yeah.
T.
So mine is a character from a story, but he is a character that occurs in a number of stories. So it's Hammerstein. He appears in Robusters initially. Do you know where Robusters, the first Robusters story was?
Wasn't it in Nemesis?
No, it's Star-Lord.
Star-Lord.
Then when they hatch, matched, and dispatched and merged in 2008, it came over. So he's initially in Robusters. You've got ABC Warriors. He's in the character, the style of robot is in Savage, which is the continuation of Invasion. He appears in Nemesis, the Brian Talbot stuff, slightly later on, Dan, so you're right. Created by Pat Mills and Kevin O'Neill. We're gonna get onto it in a second, but I'm massively drawn to him, and I think I'm drawn to him in the same way that we've talked about things previously, where he is a soldier at the end of his life.
Yeah.
And we've talked about that with a lot of Wolverine to Mark Miller comics, to lots of things, haven't we? And I'm really drawn to him, and he's got that broad-shouldered, solid, he's been through war. And he's part... So they don't want humans to die in war anymore, but the robots will be the ones to die, is, I think, a line that is in one of those issues. And in the first issue of ABC Warriors, Rojor says to him, why don't you like, they're in a graveyard of dead soldiers, and he goes, well, you're already scrap, he says to him, and you get this real sense of, oh my god, he's been through all this stuff. Now luckily I spent the afternoon with Pat today chatting about it, and he did us a, what was it, about 15 minutes, Vince, I think.
Yeah, about
like
15 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, we had I had a few ideas about Hammerstein that I've always wanted to know about, links to another character you'll hear in this interview. So have a listen, and we get deep into the personality and the reasoning and who and what and why he exists. Okay, sitting up a mountain with Pat and Lisa Mills. All right, Lisa?
I'm all right.
And we're doing an episode today, which I'm about to record later, about we're going to recommend a character from 2000 AD to talk about and to say to readers, this is a character you might like, newbies. And I've chosen Hammerstein, not Hammerstein, as I was calling him earlier. And I had a number of theories. I know one of them I ran past you last night. And my theory was that there's an extension, there's a line somehow between him and Charlie from Charlie's War. I know we've had a bit of a rumination on it. What would you think there, Pat? What was your theories?
Yeah, I think there is. Hammerstein is he's been around for like 1,000 years, and so I think in that time he's had time to think about why am I fighting? What is the purpose of it? And the things he must have seen are pretty appalling. But we in some episodes we covered his early conditioning and how he became the robot he is, which is he has to go through a process which is not that different to learning as a human being, and therefore he can get traumatized. And I think however robots go, they've probably got to have some kind of human empathy, because an AI that doesn't have that, or it's got to be plugged into them in some way. But the big thing about Hammerstein, now I'm reflecting on it, is he's a very reassuring figure.
Okay, interesting. Why so? Why do you think so? I mean, he's kind of the sergeant, isn't he? Sergeants have this reputation of being the stable person in a battalion or, you know, a regiment or whatever. You know, they're kind of the workhorses, but also they tell people what to do. And he's a sort of big-shouldered man. He's not the lark about like Rojors. He's not the maniac like Metquake. Yeah,
he's iconic for one reason, which I think Kevin O'Neill, the artist, was absolutely right about. And I was probably in disagreement with him over, because when he makes his first appearance, he has a non-human head.
Yeah.
And that was very deliberate on my part. And I think Kevin sort of bit the bullet on that. He wasn't happy about it, but he went along with it.
Yeah.
But I wanted him to be non-human so that it didn't have any kind of robot Archie or any kind of humanoid. I wanted him to feel a bit other. And so what Kevin did was he had a human head, his old human head,
yeah,
is hanging from his belt.
Yeah.
And he'd talk about his old human head and remember old battles and things like that. And eventually, of course, that human head replaces the
ABC Warriors.
Yes.
Yeah.
And really, that's very much Kevin's influence. And from a commercial point of view, I think Kevin was absolutely right. But there's other things about that head. It's very much an archetypal, reassuring image, certainly for my generation and your generation and probably today's generation, of... what should we say? The American soldier as a force for good.
Yeah.
Right? And so he looks like some variation on G.I. Joe or whoever.
Well, that's you've just covered two things I was going to ask you about. So one, I was going to ask you about the two different faces of Hammerstein, which you've covered there, interestingly, really. And secondly, I was going to ask you, is he the sort of twisted 2000 AD version of Sergeant Rock or even Captain America? You know, there's both that, like men of the people kind of thing going on, isn't there? You know.
Yeah, I think probably, as with so many of my characters, I try and have my cake and eat it. So I kind of admire the guy, because there's a part of me that wants to believe that this reassuring American image, whether it's Sergeant Rock or whoever, really is a force for good. I'd like to believe it, despite all the facts to the contrary. And then at the same time, he's also useful in another way, which probably trumps everything else, which is he's a foil for Rojors.
Yeah.
So you've got... it's the ultimate duo. And I think in some ways, maybe not so much Kevin and I, but certainly 2008, didn't exploit it to the full. It's Laurel and Hardy and or Morecambe and Wise. You've got this combination, and you couldn't get such a great combination. It would be beyond my abilities to replicate it now. So you've got this guy, Rojaws robot, who is a sewer robot and is very gross, very working class, and we could use him this afternoon, actually. Various issues there. And although he's not consciously left-wing or anything, he takes the piss out of the establishment. And then you've got Hammerstein, who stands for everything that, you know, the establishment is right.
He's almost a stuffed shirt compared to Rojaws.
Yes. And I think from time to time, that's been bounced around and we've gotten the best out of it. You know, because Rojaws can be quite outrageous. And yet there's this empathy and a bit more than empathy. There's a kind of love between those two characters that I think... isn't just in the writing. I think it's in the art as well. I think all the artists, I don't think it's quite, I mean, it's very powerful in C-3PO and R2-D2, but I don't feel quite the same love. It's a comradeship, but those two characters, they really seem to love each other, and a lot of that has to be down to the artwork.
And I think a lot of that, for me, is down to the fact they've been through wars together. They've been through so much, from Robusters onwards, you know. But I was thinking about this today because I was reading the ABC Warriors prologue in the Mech Files Volume 1, and or rereading it. And at one point, they're at a graveyard, aren't they, of fallen soldiers. And Rojaws just says to Hammerstein, well, you should be here, you old... Like, he may have said, you old bastard, you should be here. You know, I'm thinking, yeah, but there's that familiarity, there's that love between them. He's the only one who could say that to him. If Mechquake said that to him, he'd get a right hander, wouldn't he? Yeah. You know,
There's a lot of there's a lot of feeling behind them, and it probably relates to all the wars they've been through, which correspond to real life conflicts. And I think the big thing about them for a new reader is, although they're complex characters, they're complex in a reassuring way. You're going to feel safe with Hammerstein. In other words, wherever you go with him, you're not going to think, oh, this is going a bit weird. You know, what's happening here? I don't understand this. What's he going on about? And what's happening here? There's a reassurance about him that I think we probably all look for in fiction and particularly in comics. You know, if you're going to get into something, it's a commitment. So you're thinking, oh, God, have I really got to... How far am I going to go on this? Because if you get into a character, you just want more and more of it. And there's a lot of Hammerstein.
Yeah, but the thing is with Hammerstein, you've got almost an establishment character, although he is at the end, he's all that hinterland hero, he's at the end of his life almost, you always suspect it's the last mission, but you've stuck him with someone who may as well have been a robot out of the Robot Sex Pistols, who's just a fucking maniac. Do you know what I mean? Rojaws is such a punk, isn't he, compared to that? That's the difference.
Yeah, there is the polar opposites between them, and I can remember, which of course... Me being me, I don't have my original notes, but I wrote maybe something like 20, 30 pages of typed notes on all the characters in Robusters. And I had different combinations and different ideas. And these two characters, Hammerstein and Rojaws, really jumped out at me. But of course, to begin with, they didn't have names. So it's like, let's have an army robot with... a garbage robot.
Yeah.
So you've got the...
Yeah, yeah.
Because contrast between characters are what really makes things work. And then I needed a name that really summed them up as a duo. And the name I chose was from the musicals by Rodgers and Hammerstein. And so it was easy enough to adapt because Rojaws, you know, you've got these pair of teeth and... Hammerstein with this hammer arm and so on, and it just fell into place in a very natural way, along with the other key members of Robusters. And when that happens, you kind of reach a point where there's as much nostalgia for me as the writer as for the readers. They hark back to that because there's something they radiate. And I think that's probably true of all iconic comic book characters. They have something about them alongside the text equivalent. And Hammerstein, I think, has got that big time.
He's the big brother character in a way to me. He's the one you can rely on.
Okay with him. I think that's his. And from time to time, I think I've sort of mocked him a bit. The other ABC warriors mock him, and it's a bit cruel. But hey, you've got to have conflict.
He's got the shoulders for it, isn't he? That's the
yes,
thing.
He has. Yeah.
So let me ask you this then, just to conclude.
Yeah.
Who's your favourite over the years? So you basically, it's almost like your longest running 2000 AD gig.
Because
ABC Warriors and Robusters predate Slane, for example, and Nemesis. Who's your favourite one to write out of them all? Who would you say? Because I know you've just written one, haven't you? Well, not just written one, but the most recent one contains two of them.
Out of the ABC Warriors?
Yeah.
Which is my favourite character? Oh, that's such a difficult one, because I'm in love with them all in different ways. So it's hard. But if you really push me on it, I think it would probably have to be Metquake.
Okay.
With Rojor's a close second.
Yeah.
Hammerstein is easy to write, but Metquake is the idea of this bulldozer school bully robot who is endlessly thinking up new ways to bully people. I that just appeals to me. And he has something about him that's, I don't know where it comes from, really. He just started off as, and I think a lot of the reason, the inspiration for him is his strange eyes. He's just got a slit for eyes, but there's so much character invested in that, which comes from Kevin, you just look at him and you kind of laugh, but you're a bit scared of him.
Yeah, I was like that as a kid. Monster. I thought, oh my God, he's just going to eat people. He's just going to kill people. Yeah.
And his strange way of speaking, which is... It's a unique style. I won't try and imitate it now, but and he's, of course, his grotesque slogan, big jobs.
was it the mongrel one? Is it Smush?
Smush. Mongrel.
Oh my God, I remember reading that as a kid thinking that's the most awful onomatopoeic word ever. Yeah, you know what I mean? It's like terrible.
I mean, all these original characters, they had so much invested in them, and they were. They were nearly lost because my own theory is that I think Road Trooper was probably doing very well at that point. And they wanted to focus on that. And so where I'm demanding high quality artists and being a general troublemaker. So ABC Warriors was originally killed off after 20 episodes. And as I'm writing about at the moment, we kind of snuck him back in Nemesis of all places. Because it was the only way to do it. And although it's a little awkward in places, it was a chance because the editorial had been saying to me, or rather saying to the readers, the ABC Warriors are coming back. And they weren't.
Right.
And I was thinking, I hate that, where, you know, the editorial is telling... Porkies to the readers, and so I thought they've got to come back, and well done to Brian Talbot who revived them.
In the Nemesis strip, which is quite well dealt with in the Nemesis audiobook as well. They cover that bit, don't they? Yeah, it's quite nicely done. Okay. Cool.
Right.
Thanks, man. That's brilliant. Yeah, I did say it only take you 5 minutes, but we've been 15 minutes. But back to sitting on your balcony. No, it's me. Yeah. Thanks, dude.
Well, there you go. If you want to know something about your character, then why not go straight to the source?
Yeah, well, it's drinking beer with the person who created him. I've got sunstroke from sitting out on his balcony, but yeah, it was good. I thought it was just a lovely opportunity for us to sort of bear in mind the subject, which just coincided completely by luck for this week. So yeah, it seemed a good opportunity, especially with Sue on as well.
So for this sort of character for Hammerstein, Robusters, where would you tell people to start?
I would say there are Robusters trades available, but it doesn't really get into them. They're slightly more adventurous. There's the moment there's some great robust stories. But for me, his personality of this, like we said about this PTSD soldier, lies in the ABC Warriors stories. So go to the Mech Files. Mech Files 1, the hardback, is stupid price on Amazon at the moment. So go to the Kindle version and you can read it all in it. It's got Kevin O'Neill, Brendan McCarthy, it's Mike McMahon. It's got like a killer's list of artists. And it is, I hadn't read it for maybe 10 years. And I'm like, fucking hell, this is good. So good, man. Yeah, so amazing. Go and get the Mech Files on Kindle. And I think there's 4 Mech Files. And then we've just had the Joe Pineapple's Road Jaws story come out. That's come out, I think, 2 weeks ago, which is the most recent one involving those characters. So go and get that. Yep.
Those, of course, are our particular picks. But there is a raft of
characters. Dan's got a list, isn't he?
We might have to forgo the reader's list of... Because we're in okay, let's quickly go for it. Kieran Squires gives a shout out to Chopper, Song of the Surfer, Horn God, Necropolis, Deadman, Armageddon, all out there for sure. He's always had a soft spot for Surfer. The thing that bugged me was always surfing. Chopper Eyes never had that problem. Dio and Quinch by Tony Foster. Enjoyed Harry 22. Got Troyes and Judge Anderson Shambhala. The entire Nikolai Dante. We've got Peter Duncan. Favorite character is Anderson. We didn't mention Anderson at all.
No, but,
Pete knows his 2000 AD as well, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yes. We've got Jorn Thomas, shout out to Slain the King, Matthew Bunce, Halo Jones, all the Black and White Slain stories, Love's Nemesis, Simon Russell, shout out for the ABC Warriors when drawn by SMS, Slain, Strontium Dog, got Gareth Hopkins, who's got Winwood and Cord from Indigo Prime, lots of there's the nice little bit. We've got all this in the Slack, so again, another shout out for the Slack. Go check that out. We've got Steve McClumsky from Envision Comics, he's got fond memories of Judge Red, The Pit, Cursed Earth, Road Trooper, and there's a couple more, but yeah, that's about the we've got some great stuff there.
Yeah,
great stuff.
There's great stuff from our community. There's also there's a big 2000 AD comics community,
massive,
which they are very much into their book. They are lifelong toothers, as they call themselves. And would you have it, there is upcoming show. We didn't know about this, did we?
No, this caught me by surprise.
It's not as if we've Dan's been shouting about it since January, but no.
Without
pay. Lawless Comic Con is back. So, you know, for those people who just want more of this, as well as a lot of indie comics, UK and the UK comic scene in general, that's going to be back in May. And because we're celebrating the fact that this is the 10th year of that show, which is absolutely unbelievable for comic conventions just in general anyway, and to celebrate that and to find out more, we had friend of the show, Sue, one of the organisers, back on to talk about the show itself and what it's going to give you lovely people if you go there. So, let's hear that now. Right, folks, the time is almost here, and for the 10th year in a row, Lawless Comic Con is returning to raise some hell and showcase some of the best and brightest in the UK comic scene, as well as, of course, acting as a top destination for those folks out there who are 2000 AD fans. I think there's a few of them here and there somewhere. We're big fans
number
of the
one
show.
2000 AD con, I'm going to say, isn't it?
Yeah,
at the moment.
Totally. Yeah. We're big fans of the show. It's always a good time. And to talk to us about this year's show and more, we have once again Sue Hadrill, one of the organisers, joining us. Welcome back.
Hi. Thanks ever so much for having me.
Now,
right, Sue.
10 hey, Sue. Years. Now, we Hello. Just want to say up front, we've been shouting about Lawless for a long time. Sue hasn't given us any money for this.
We've got two free passes.
But Dan gets a hell of a kick out of recommending it. Well, and the shout out.
I love
every
it.
Time. And
that's awesome.
And seeing like the guest lineup and just seeing how this show is forming is quite a thing. So, I mean, there's so much to look forward to this year. So,
it's mad, isn't it? There's so much going on, isn't there?
I mean,
same venue and everything, though, isn't it, Sue? I've heard you talk about finding somewhere else is just almost like prohibitively pricey. So you're staying where you are. It's like the known quantity for you, isn't it? Is that right?
Very much so. Yeah. The we never really wanted to go into the whole big warehouse of artists lining up to you know, lining the walls kind of thing. And we like the layout of the rooms that we've got, because we can do your traders, we can do your panels, we can do the exhibitions that we've been doing the last few years. And the space is big enough to fit a good size amount of guests without it being overwhelming. And yeah, the cost of room, cost of just conference rooms and stuff in city centres generally is massive. So we've known the guys at the DoubleTree for years. We've got a really good relationship with them. So yeah, it's we're sticking around. We ain't going nowhere.
And I know, awesome. I think I said this last time you were on, but the DoubleTree there, whatever it used to be called, goes back to the mid-90s as a venue for comic conventions. It's kind
it
of
does,
like
yeah. But
the
Mike
place.
Forward did a Bristol Comic Con back in September last year that I nipped along to, which was really good fun as
Cool.
well. He sort of brought it back for a one-off show kind of thing. That was really good.
Yeah, we did the last one before that, Vince, didn't we? Do you
Yeah,
remember?
which was 5, 6 years ago? I can't
Yeah.
remember.
Yeah.
It'd be great to have more sort of shows there,
Yeah.
but
Bristol's almost the
less.
home of comic conventions in the UK, and has been since the 90s. You know, it's
Yeah.
when we finished with UCAC, Bristol Comics Expo became the place,
Yeah.
the destination for comics, but long before MCMs and all this sort of thing.
I know
You know.
that at Bristol as well, that weekend has a kind of art festival as well, because they do a lot with graffiti artists and
Yeah.
stuff like that. So overall, Bristol, the actual city itself, has a big kind of art festival either that weekend or around that particular time as well. We actually don't generally get involved with the kind of the Bristol scene overall. It's always been very sort of enclosed scene that we've created from the back of the comic side of things, rather than getting involved with the local
Yeah.
community. So I don't think actually Bristol really know we're even there.
But the thing
needs
about
them?
it is,
Yeah.
like Lawless, which was like a 2000 AD like base convention back in the day, and then has expanded a little bit. There's almost a kind of, over these 10 years, there must have been a sort of community that's built up around that as well, hasn't there?
It's been
Surely.
amazing, to be honest. I mean, we started off in 2014 in Birmingham initially as a Dreadcon. That's how it came about, because the Carl Urban Dread film came out a couple of years
Yeah.
beforehand. There was a whole bunch of guys dressing up as judges. It was quite big within the kind of pop culture scene at the time, and we dove in off the back of that, really. So I think we had about five guests at the very first one, and about 60 people turn up, and most of them are all kind of judges and of that scene. And it's just got bigger and better and bigger and better since then. Then we sort of went more into Dread in 2000 AD when we brought it over to Bristol, and that whole community. We had all the props and stuff come along. I was just looking at some old photos from like when it was Lawgiver. Because we changed the name over from Lawgiver to Lawless to expand it out into a more comic area. And just looking at the old Lawgiver photos and stuff like that, we've got, so yeah, we had the props from the film there and everything. And yeah, some of the costumes, all the costumes were coming in from 2000 AD and stuff like that. And yeah, now we're obviously expanding it out into more British comics, because we've got the 77 and a lot more small press and small publishers and stuff like that. And it's just got bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah,
That's
because I know
excellent.
you were doing Lawless the year that they had the 40th,
No, we weren't.
and weren't you? Oh no,
No.
did you miss that year? Did you? Or...
Well, they very kindly asked us not to, basically.
Oh right, okay.
Okay.
They didn't. Yeah, it was just more of a clash for the guests, I think. And
Oh okay.
they
Oh,
went for
this
days.
rings a bell. Sorry, mate. Yeah, I remember
Yeah,
you
no.
saying
Then so
this.
they. So I, it wasn't the same weekend or anything. I think it was a couple of months beforehand or anything. But yeah, they politely asked us not to do a 2000 AD themed show when they were having their big 40th anniversary 2000 AD themed show. So yeah, 2016 was the first year we had off.
So what did you say? £1,000 to do that? Pounds.
Yeah. £1,000, and I go down in the third round.
Yeah.
And then I think soon after that, we changed it from Lawgiver to Lawless, just to move it away from, it will always be a 2000 AD Dread themed show.
Yeah,
That's
of
our
course.
core audience, and we love them to absolute pieces. We will never turn them away at the door or anything like that. So it's always going to be, I'm never going to turn that down at all. But just from a professional perspective, so we're not treading on anybody's toes with
Yeah.
rebellion. We definitely want to make sure we're involving other comics as well within the industry.
Yeah, I get you. But what the reason I mentioned it, with although I was wrong in what I supposed, is that we've got the 50th coming up in just slightly over 2.5 years. Isn't that gone
Oh, forgot
quickly?
about that.
Oh
Pricey.
man, fucking
Christ.
hell.
That's
We're
just,
all old.
oh my
That's not,
God.
we're all so
Oh my
old.
God. I mean, can you believe like it's been 10 years
No,
since we were there, yeah.
this is
it wasn't. Somebody actually told me last year, and I went, wait, what? You
So
better do something.
10 years of doing this convention.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously it's grown, and like you, there's been ups, there's been downs. As any, I mean, firstly, I've got to say, fair play for a convention to still be coming back after 10 years. There's a lot of ones that we have loved. There's been some indie cons that we've absolutely loved going to, but it's just, it's so hard. It's like any sort of adventure, isn't it?
Absolutely. No. And I'm very proud to be still doing it 10 years later. And I'm very proud of the people that we've met and the communities that we've brought together over those 10 years. I think, it's an awesome thing to be a part of, to be honest.
There's a lovely vibe at the show as well. So relaxed. Back to the venue, it's such a cool little venue, but because of the nature of it, because you're not, taking over the Excel or whatever, is it easy to sort of keep on the day when your head is spinning God knows how many degrees when everything else is going on, is it easier to keep track of things because it is more sort of contained?
Yeah, I think so, definitely. There's definitely an element of control in it, of you can quickly buzz from one end of the one room to the next kind of thing and wander. And there's an element of it, it's once you've got through that first manic buzz of the morning, it kind of runs itself quite nicely. Yeah. So you can't just do the wandering around and keep an eye on everybody and everything. And there isn't, it's never felt overcrowded. We could definitely do sort of another, we could easily fit another 100 people in there and I'll be very happy to do that. But it always has that feeling of being crowded but not heaving. So,
yeah, that's good.
You get that real nice vibe of lots and lots of people there and lots of stuff going on and lots of things happening and activity and crowded seats and stuff like that when you go to see the panels. But it doesn't feel like it's really annoyingly heaving and you're just like rammed in, bumping into people and sitting in queues for days on end and all the rest of
Not a great experience, that.
Yeah.
I love that balance of it.
Yeah, and also it's a 2-day show, isn't it? Just to clear up for listeners, this is not just a one and done sort of thing. This is Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, it started off as a 1-day show. It was always a 1-day show, and then
I fully blame
Paul LaBelle for this one, but he convinced me to do it as a 2-day show back in 2018-19, something like that. And we essentially a lot of people stayed over Saturday. A lot of the guests stayed over Saturday night. And we just, it would make sense to roll it straight over and carry it on.
I bet you the bar is pleased. So
they have been told to stock up most definitely.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of guests, you've got a hell of a guest list. If you want to just run down what you've got and
our guest list is so good this year. Let me bring it up. So I'm so chuffed we got Brian Bolland back again this year He came a couple of years back and he had a thoroughly good time. And when I messaged him, he was well up for it again. So I'm really, really pleased that we've managed to pin him down again this year. Some of the other sort of bigger repeating guests that we've had previously, literally the only reason they couldn't make it is because clashes in kind of timetable or family commitments and things like that, which is kind of nice to know, but a shame we couldn't get them along. And then more recently, Garth Ennis obviously confirmed back on Monday. That's
fantastic.
Which that's good.
Very, very pleased about. And again, he was one initially he couldn't make it due to sort of family clashes and bits and pieces going on. And then, he just emailed me out of the blue going, can I come to the show? And I was like, yes. Others, we got Liam Sharp and Matilda McCormick Sharp are coming, first time guests, but obviously back in the UK now. Liam's back in the UK now from America. Really, really good to meet him and have him along. Greg Staples is coming again this year. First time a few years since he's been along, so it'll be good to see him again as well. Who else have we got as big guests? Mike Perkins and Keith Burns, friends of John Wagner, so not met them before, but really looking forward to meeting them and having him along. Pi Parr, I'm looking forward to seeing Pi Parr because he's obviously
with
Rob Williams. Doing all his bits and pieces at the moment. What's the comic he's
doing?
I've got a fallout print of Piper's just there. The listeners can't see it, but
Vince is pointing to it over his left shoulder, framed on the wall behind him.
Yeah,
we've been recommending Petrolhead for a few months now.
I love Petrolhead. Yeah, I do need to get the. I got off the first couple of. I think I've got the first comic, and I have not had a chance to get the rest.
So I will get a bit
of it when it comes out because I love the art on that. It's amazing.
Really, that's on Global Comics.
There you go.
Dropping the sponsor there. Yeah. I'm a company man.
Any panels or anything like that you want to pimp?
So literally working on the panels as we speak today. I started thinking on that today and putting the shout out to the group chat saying, who do you want to see chatting together and what do you want to see them chatting about? So we're definitely going to do something along those lines. I think Brian wants to get together with John and Mick to talk about Judge Death and how that came about and
awesome.
The startings of that. So that'll be really, really good. And I think, yeah, we other than that, we haven't got, I think we've got a few other sort of bits and pieces planned, but we haven't set anything in stone for the program. That's literally next on the agenda, is to start putting our
Okay.
program together.
What would be your ideal panel, Sue, if you could do it?
I think, yeah, definitely Brian, John and Mick is going to be a really, really big one.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm thinking beyond the guests, beyond anything,
Oh, okay.
who would be your ideal
What do
panel?
you
Yeah.
Oh, I'm a
Yeah.
big Tank Girl fan,
Yeah, I
so
know.
I'd
I
get
thought you might say that.
Jamie Hewlett and Alan Martin along in a heartbeat would be, and I'd get them there all day, just be there just like that. Hi, just keep talking. It's fine, just carry on
The rest of the convention is
talking.
burning down in the background as you.
People are sleeping in the alleys of the
That would
hallway.
be my ideal panel,
But
is
soon
them.
there's dead people out there. Go away.
It's that everything is fine a gif just with me watching the
So that goes on to, let's ignore them as your favorite ever, your white whale of a guest. Who else would you have who would be your white whale? You
I
can't
think
say them.
I'd love to get Jock along again because I'm a big fan of Jock's work.
Okay.
He came back on back in 2015, and it clashes with a lot of his timetables, so we don't get to see him very often again.
Okay.
I don't know actually. I'm actually really bad with comic artists and stuff like that
Okay.
because I'm an organizer rather than the
That's fair.
contestants.
And
also, a lot of them
Yeah.
are already at the bloody show. I
Yeah,
mean, looking at
exactly.
the
Yeah,
guest
exactly.
list, I'm like,
There's
who are
not that
you going
many
to pick
people
that
missing
isn't
out
on
there.
there?
Andy Diggle came last year, and I'm a big fan of Andy Diggle's The Losers. So Andy and Jeff again, that's why I
Well,
like
he did
Jeff
that
as
with
well.
Jock. That would make a nice little
It
panel as
would be
well, wouldn't
really,
it?
really good.
Yeah,
It
I
was
saw
really good
the
to meet
I was
Andy
looking at
Diggle
the
last
John
year.
Burdis. Is it John Burdis? He did a video of it last year, didn't he? That's on YouTube. You can watch. It's quite a good little video. You can see, it gives you a real taste of each. He goes to each table and all the
Yes.
exhibitions and the queue and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I spotted Eamon Clarke in the queue. I messaged him saying, "Oh, I've just seen you,
Oh, Eamon, I'm
Eamon.
always there.
Yeah.
Looking forward to catching up with him again.
But yeah, I think we've had some of the big names that I've always wanted. Like when Greg Staples first said he was coming to the show, I was like, oh my God, because yeah, again, he's done really, really good tank bills and stuff like that. So
Awesome.
the stuff he does on Magic the Gathering is stunning. Like, yeah, his background work is
He does
amazing.
Thought Bubble occasionally. He was opposite us at Thought Bubble one year, wasn't he? Do you remember?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, because I bought his Elephant Man books.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. I've
Because
got
I
one
was,
of
do you
those. He
remember I
gave me
was in
one.
the, do you remember in the hotel, I was chatting to one of the staff on the reception while I was waiting for someone to meet me, and he said, "What are you doing here?" I said, "Oh, I'm at the comic convention." He says, "My uncle's a guest at that. He tells me he's a big deal in comics." I went, "All right, okay." Yeah, he's always going on about it at family gatherings, what a big deal he is in comics. I went, "All right, who is it?" And when Greg Staples, I said, "Well, he is." Well, fair enough. What are you going to do? You know what I
I
mean?
knew that.
Yeah. And I saw him later. I said, "I think I met your nephew earlier." He went, "Oh, he works in the hotel around the corner." I said, "Yeah, that's him,
I said he was a big deal.
So obviously, with that wonderful guest list, and like people can meet these people, and I mean, when I was there, I remember John Wagner's always got a. There's always a little list, a little queue of people with their little collections ready to sign because John's such a lovely bloke as well.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, past
But
guest.
so many fantastic guests there. But also, like I say, you got the panels. Is there going to be some like usually have a draw off, don't you? Is
Yeah,
that
and you have
happening
that
again?
raffle, don't you, as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we do have a few different pieces. I don't think we're going to do the draw off this year. The draw off is quite hard to organise because
I can imagine.
not a lot of them are very quick. They're not quick draws, so they're not very
Yeah.
comfortable with standing up in front of a flip chart and doing something on the fly. So the draw off tends to be usually the same guests who have come a few years, and like Henry Fint's always good up for that, and Mike Collins is always up for it, and they're good fun to do. But it's quite hard, so we don't do that every year just because it is quite hard to organise, and not a lot of them really want to volunteer
It's
for
quite
it.
pressure, isn't it, on the
Yeah,
artists as well, I
yeah,
think.
yeah. On a flip chart in front of everybody, and it's really, really good fun. It's one of my favourite panels to do is the draw off because it's such a laugh when you get it going. But it is quite hard to pin people down to volunteer for it.
I saw Staz Johnson do it one year, Bix. He was really good. Yeah,
Awesome.
really
We
good.
want to test
And
that
Alan
out.
Davis,
That's right.
yeah.
Yeah, we should get him on one there. We're doing a. So we're doing a couple of things. We're doing a not a raffle. Auction. We're doing a proper art auction this year, so I think we've
Oh,
got
okay.
some. So Steve Ball from the 77 is in charge of organising that. We've got some original art that's going to be available, including a massive scrapbook that's been provided by John Higgins of all his collected works that he's gathered over the years from his
Wow.
studio,
Awesome.
basically. And we're raising money for Rewriting Earth. So anything you
For
big
what,
art
sorry,
in
mate?
your Rewriting Earth is our charity this year, which is a
And what
climate
is
change.
that?
It's a climate change charity.
Okay.
They released a large comic book. It's Paul Goodenough's rewriting a climate change charity. So he released a comic book called Rewriting Extinction. They've recently changed their name, and it's all to do, and it's using comics to raise awareness of climate change, essentially.
Right. Okay.
I've not heard of that. I have to check that out. That sounds interesting.
So, yeah, I'll send some. Yeah, I'll send you some links for it. But we normally kind of previous years we usually do a mental health charity because it does support a lot of our kind of core audience and stuff.
Yeah.
And this year we wanted to do something again a little bit more climate change, a lot of climate themes. Just what can we do? It's all about governments and corporations half the time. So what can a little guy do that's maybe that's going to make a difference, and that kind of theme. So
cool.
So yeah, the art auction is there to raise money for the charity, and yeah, we're doing it. We always have our tombola every year. And
yes,
love our tombola because we get some really good stuff in that, and people just donate. We've had a prop lawgivers and judge helmets. We've
got
art available sometimes, and I've no idea what goes into the turn. I turn up on the day, and then it's like, here's all of this stuff that we're going to give away on the tombola.
Five or a zero. And
yeah, exactly. It's five or zero. It's £2.50 a ticket, and we raise low again. It's all for charity, so we raise tons of money for charity for that.
Just for
Vince
US
is donating
listeners.
For that. You're donating, aren't you, Vince? You're doing like a, you can stay over my house.
Don't.
Should we tell what US listeners and overseas listeners what a tombola is? They might not know. So
Dan,
you'd have like
a tombola expert.
I'm a big tombola man, me. You have like a table full of prizes, and they'd all have a number on them, and you've got a big bowl, you buy a certain amount of tickets, you pull out the number. If your number matches what's on one of the prizes, you get that prize. So it's a kind of
why is it called a tombola?
Yeah, it was invented by a guy called Tom.
because people keep calling it a raffle as well, and there's a difference between a
what is wrong with these
raffle.
People, Sue?
Sorry?
Let's cancel those people online.
I have to make sure I tell them it is a tombola, not a raffle, because you can win prizes on it. You're not just like baffling. You know? But I can't remember what the difference is, but there is a difference.
And another thing that I love is the art exhibitions and things like that.
Good, isn't it? What have you got this year?
So we've started doing art exhibitions in the last few years because we did one for the tribute to Carlos Esguerra back in 2019. Mm. That's how it started, because we had some amazing art available for that he'd done, original art that was available, and we wanted to display it. John Wagner, you know, helped organise it all and get it all sorted. So we did a proper exhibit for that, and it was really popular. So this year we do it. David Roach is collating his amazing collection. So bringing on about 90 original pieces of work from various artists, and we're displaying it all. It's called David Roach Presents the Best of British. It's never before seen, never been collated before like this.
Awesome.
Nobody's ever seen. It's literally we've created it specifically for the 10 year anniversary.
He's got a hell of a collection, I'm guessing.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I was like, by the way, what about doing this? And he was just like, actually, that's a really good idea. So yeah, between the two of us,
watch out for people. They're planning a heist.
Yeah, there's definitely security on board. You know, we've got judges, right?
And
get to wear a uniform.
Bloody hell, that's a bit brutal, Sue.
Yeah,
exactly. We will murder you if you don't. But the old 2000 AD firm aren't sure of a punch, are they? If you don't want to upset that firm, do you?
They're willing to get involved, definitely. I was just going to see if I've got an idea of some of the artists. So we've got John Burns.
Nice.
So this is where my knowledge is lacking slightly, because I've got lots of surnames here, but not full names on the art that he's listed. Noble, Lindfield, Leach, Stokes, Holdaway, Buzelli, Burns, Carlos, Castillo, DeLorco, Embleton, another Burns, Bellamy.
Okay, a lot of OG. Old school UK and Spanish and Italian creators.
Cool. Oh, Kennedy. We've got some Kennedy on here.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, a whole range of stuff. So, again, not just 2000 AD, just a whole range of British comics over the years. Like a lot of historical stuff. So you've got the old war comics, the romance comics, the boys' own and the girls' own kind of comics and all that side of things. So,
it's a lovely thing to see. Like, I can stand there for ages.
It's going
to
be amazing.
Well, Burns did George and Lynn, so you might get some George and Lynn sauciness.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I'm really looking forward to seeing what he brings and seeing the display and everything. It's going to be quite something to. The fact that it's going to be kind of a one-off as well, I think it's going to be
Oh yeah, you got to be there, people. You got to be there.
Have we said the date yet?
25th and 26th of May.
Yeah. There you go. Good.
So it's always the last bank holiday in May because we all like the day off on Monday.
Oh, good shit.
Yeah. Probably after all the drinking, some of them need it.
Those lot drink more than the Queen Mother, don't they? That lot.
Big thing we're also doing this year is we're doing a VIP ticket, or we have done a VIP ticket. They've all sold out now, but we're doing an evening show. So normally we just do the Saturday and Sunday. Mm. VIP ticket holders have access to a VIP evening. So
what is the VIP evening?
So we've got all the guests on. We're putting all the tables away and everything, getting out some.
I think John Wagner's doing a pole dance. That's one of the.
John Wagner's definitely probably going to be on stage, but I'm not sure about the pole dance. We're going to get everyone seated, get some tables out, get some wine and nibbles out. We're going to do a bit of a sort of Parkinson style interview with me and some of the other organisers about 10 years of Lawless, sharing some stories and some laughs. There's an award ceremony, so the 77 are presenting some awards for some of our artists and creators who are going to be at the show. Nice. We got some live music. Sally Jane Hurst is going to be providing a little bit of live music as well. So
she's like a sort of jazz singer-y type character.
Sounds awesome.
It's going to be amazing. So it's just an excuse to get everyone together and have a posh night out. Get your posh togs on, basically. Have some wine and mingle with your guests and
Vince
creators.
Vince gets ball gown out.
I'm really looking forward to it. It's an excuse to let your hair down. Everyone's going to descend on the bar afterwards anyway. But at least I get to enjoy the evening a little bit instead of just disappearing off for an early night. morning.
Just be careful. So don't overdo it. Enjoying yourself because you've got another day of organisation today.
I don't. Everyone else goes and get drunk. I go and have. I'm done by about 11 o'clock. I'm like, okay, I have to be up at 5.
Opening one of those little coffee packets in your room, and eating the biscuit they supply you with.
Hands of Monster just like rolling around.
I did post a story earlier about a British passengers on a 4-hour flight to Turkey managed to drink the entire plane dry in 25 minutes.
Wow. Oh my God.
I flew into Malaga. It was like that on my plane at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
I think our lot have drunk the bar dry once. I've got a feeling that there has been a year where they have.
Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah. Okay, I think it happened at the 40th as well. I think, didn't the 40th happen as well? I think.
Wow.
The London one?
Yeah. Bars are not prepared for the 2000 AD crowd.
You feel like saying, like, next time the 50th rolls around, like, say to them, like, there's going to be some big drinking here.
I love all the stories that come out the next morning as well of everyone who couldn't sleep, so went down to the bar at like 4 in the morning and still found people just hanging out.
I'm going to Heroes in Charlotte in North Carolina in June, and I see that Bisley's just been announced, and I feel like emailing the hotel and saying, by the way.
Just prepare yourself.
Bisley couldn't make it this year because he was in the States. It clashes with one of his weekends that he's in the States. So, he would have been along in a shot, I think.
Yeah.
Any excuse to get together with Fabry.
Yeah, that's true.
Who is there this year.
And,
To find out more, are there tickets still available, Sue, at the moment?
So we've got tickets still available. All the VIP tickets are sold out now because we're quite limited on space and numbers for those guys. But weekend and day tickets for Saturday and Sunday is still available. So it's £35 for the day ticket or £70 for the full weekend. Obviously, that doesn't include the evening show and everything because that's VIP only. But www.lawlesscomiccon.co.uk. is the link. Just Google Lawless Comic Con, it comes straight up, and there's a link on there for the ticket site, and you can get day and weekend tickets now.
Are you going to be putting up like the program closer to the time as well?
I've got to put it all together and then get the graphics designed for it, and then we announce it on the group page. So that's a lot of this is organized via social media. Obviously, it's quite a good little community, so if you look Lawless Comic Con on Facebook, come and join the Facebook group as well and come and have a chat and say hello. All the updates and stuff are posted up there generally.
Awesome. Well, there you go, folks. You've got no excuse. You've got to go to this show because it's proper good fun. And of course, we will, of course, update you in the lead up to the show. Dan's not going to stop shouting about it every week.
He loves it.
He's desperate for the new date to be announced. So
he's going to start on next year's one.
If I can work out the date, I can start it immediately.
I'm pretty sure I have already booked it, but I'll do
Let me know, Sue.
Don't work too hard, Sue.
Always bank holiday weekend in May, so you can pretty much put it in your diary.
Off you go, Dan.
Whatever that weekend is.
Yeah.
He expects no.
And put this one in your diary because you definitely want to be there. And thank you for joining us again, Sue.
Thanks,
can't
Sue.
Wait to see the show.
You guys.
Well, there you have it, folks. One place to go to get your 2000 AD fix and more. And who knows, you might see one or two of us there as well. So definitely check out Lawless and 2000 AD. Just look, if you've always wondered about it, just get stuck in because it's an absolute pillar of the UK scene. So there's absolutely fantastic.
You can get there's a load of stuff on eBay.
Yeah,
you can get cheap.
Yeah. And it's part of the DNA of comics in general.
Worldwide comics.
Absolutely worldwide comics. So, speaking of comics and beyond, we're going to recommend some comics in a second. But before that, do we have any shout outs, gents?
I've got a couple. First one, Get on Glass City from Dave Craner and Roman Grubsky. It's on Kickstarter, and we've been seeing loads of the preview pages come through. It looks really good, actually.
Yeah, loving that.
I'm backing it. You can get all the issues. So it's that classic three. It's the third issue, but you can get all the issues at once. And you can the third issue is it's kind of like a futuristic murder mystery thriller kind of story. And it's the last issue. Issue three is 60 pages to the conclusion of the story. So go and get on that. Totally personal and selfish. Flesh and Ink is out there. Our first Tribute Press 100-page, very graphic novel. It's about a comic publisher above a strip club in 70s England. The head writer prepares for war as evil Satanists kidnap one of the girls. And that's how it starts. And then we get a monster that looks like a penis. Going back it on Kickstarter, folks.
What more can you say?
Like penis monsters.
Can't wait. Yeah.
There you go. Thank you.
Dan, what have you got?
Me, yes.
Clip that bit out. Just clip that bit out.
Yeah. Me, yes.
Me, yes. Yeah.
Steamroller Man 1, an absurdly funny superhero adventure. From Matthew Schofield, Being a Hero has really gone through his head, a retro-flavored superhero comedy written and drawn by Simpsons director Matthew Schofield. It's not launched on Kickstarter yet, but you can do that. It'll save me and notify me. It's got 135 followers. I think this Kickstarter is going to do well. I think Kickstarter is also going to do well. Kill the Bride from TBH Comics.
Oh, yeah.
Love, Lies, and Lethal Intentions in the Galaxy's Most Unlikely Venue.
I've signed up for this.
Nice one. Go check this one out. It's the latest one from... The Damien, me, and Kieran's little comic imprint. And this is the next one out from us. So go check that one out. Do it now. Do it.
Do it. Do it now.
Give me a couple of mine. I don't do that.
This isn't so much a shout out or a recommendation as such. I, of course, pledge to Flesh and Ink.
Thank you.
Earlier, because I want Tony to scribble something obscene into it, just for me.
I think I can manage that.
I can eBay it for a high price or hold it as blackmail over him. Yeah. Either way, it'll be special. And Kickstarter occasionally just recommends you other comic book Kickstarters, doesn't it? It recommends you other things. Yeah. And there's one that's, as we speak, it's probably only got a few hours left to go. It had an 80, and I just wanted to bring this up on the show. It had an £80 goal, and I suggest that you both look this up when I mention
this. Right,
this sounds great.
It succeeds an £80 goal. It's made £4,769. This was a dot. It's called Dude, Where's My Weed? Number one. it's an NSFW stoner comic. A pot dealer and her stoner best friend go on a revenge mission to retrieve her stolen weed.
Seems now, to be mostly about boobs, though, in the picture.
Yes, and the first
there's
reward...
a man snorting cocaine off a woman's breasts.
Exactly,
This is outrageous.
The first tier is a $10 just for the PDF. I don't, and it's got like It is what it is. I it's not so much a shout or a recommend, but I just want all of you lovely listeners to go on to Kickstarter and type in that just to view it. And I'd like to know your thoughts.
You've seen that splash page?
I don't know. I have
to be a fucking few hundred for that.
I can see where they've done that money on that cover. It's like Christ almighty.
Yeah. But
Christ.
The second image on the campaign. I can
see that's what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
I heard something, you know, off the rails as a speech. I always, it's a turn of phrase. I always thought it was a train coming off the rails.
Yeah.
Someone said to me today, it's when someone's just come off doing lines of coke. You come off the rails and you're going fucking nuts. Maybe that's a more modern day interpretation. Yeah. It would certainly explain. Go on.
24 pages.
Is that what it is?
Book is 100% complete and ready to print. Issue 1, 24 pages.
I can't really see right now.
Well, I'll let you know what it's like.
It is from the pub.
You can get an SFW option for a cover, which is topless, or you can get a super NSFW option, which is fully nude.
Right. I tell you what, though. This is from the publisher Submarine Sex House.
Yeah.
And have you seen who the credits on the front cover? Have you seen the second one? Can you believe this? Have you seen the second credit? Look on the front cover, the first cover, right?
Yeah.
Read it out. Can you see the main cover?
Is this the Dreaming High variant?
No. It's the one at the top. It just says the story is the cover gallery. You can see the main one, which is essentially a riff on Dude, Where's My Car?
Yeah, Carla Diaz.
No. On the bottom left corner, it says the main cover is by series artist Carla Diaz.
Yeah.
But that Carla Diaz, from the looks of it, a great draftsman. But the second credit is for the Messiah.
Oh, God, that's awful. I'm not sure if the Messiah would approve of this comic.
Yeah.
I mean,
maybe he means Damien, who we're on this call.
Ah, yeah.
I was thinking, well, the Lucena Gaib. Should we bring it back around to June?
No, don't.
Comes back to June. All the tradies would definitely be going for the super NSFW cover.
Filth.
Unbelievable. Yeah. But,
Spice.
But he'd have to. You see how Charney treats him, but he doesn't get none there.
Right.
Right.
From that to stuff that perhaps you should check out, it's time to recommend some comics. Tony, you got one this week, haven't you?
Just one this week because I'm happily sunning myself in Spain. So Love Me, issue one. It's not
I do love you.
Name of the comic. Thank you. Mad Cave Studios, again, who were a bit of a favourite of ours. And literally, I didn't even go to the Mad Cave page to look for this. I just found this and it looked good. Written by Francesco Perillo, art by Stefano Cadicelli, I'm a big fan of his stuff. Colours, Lorenzo S. Caramella. Letters, Buddy Beaumont. Editor, James B. Emmett. There's a variant cover by Dustin Nguyen. It's about a large egg-shaped robot called Jojo and his cat Frida. And he's a lonely robot, and he lives in his apartment with his cat, spending his days drinking coffee, listening to old music, and his job is driving a taxi. The cat monologues the opening section of this story. Oh my God, this city stinks worse than my shit, says the cat. We then follow Jojo on his day at work, and he begins to monologue himself as he's driving around. And the city is a massive, smashed-together mess of different styles of buildings, part retro, part modern, part Blade Runner, part 1920s, if that makes sense. It's Cardicelli's style. I love his style. It's not the first time I've recommended him on the show. Jojo's making the most of his day, trying to stay content with his lot. You know, he's just this sort of happy, gullible, nice robot dude. And he picks up a beautiful customer and something romantic begins to happen. Now, it's an interesting one, this. I mean, I love Stefano Cardicelli's art. Have a look at him, guys. There's a real strangeness to his style. It's nowhere near, but slightly near, the work of somebody like Brendan McCarthy with that high use of colour, but not like him. I mean, people are going to say, oh, he's not like him, but somehow in my mind, I align them somewhere on the same shelf. This has, though, all the hallmarks of noir. So we know that noir has certain rules, doesn't it? You know, it's got to be the dangerous femme fatale, you know, the gullible Joe Normal. You know, there's all these sort of things that if you apply yourself to the rules of noir, these things happen. I mean, the girl is a little bit more Tank Girl than she is Lana Turner, to be fair, but you sense that something is happening and you're drawn into the story. But issue one is just a love story. This is where it confused me slightly. So issue one is a love story. He meets this girl. He falls in love with her almost certainly speaking to her in the back of a cab, and they arrange to meet, and something happens at the end which I won't spoil. However, if you look at the cover to issue two, there appears to be a gunfight going on. Okay. So to me, it's almost like this first issue is all set up. So I will give that a slight criticism. As beautifully told as it is, I bought it for the visuals. I love the art in it. There's something very distinctive. I think, I can't remember who said it on the Slack, but someone said that Stefano's style is a little bit Marmite. And I can see some people might not quite like it as much as I do. But it's all set up. It's all about this setup with the woman. If it was me, I would have moved it into the area of the violent area. I mean, the cover to issue two looks like it's Stefano Cadaselli's version of a gunfighting film.
Awesome.
Yeah, so it's got this extra dimension that you have to wait for issue two, but luckily it's hinted at by the cover in the second issue. So I think maybe it might make a better trade. I'm not sure what the score is with Man Cave and their trades, to be fair. I'm not sure whether they're, because some companies put out a trade and it's like more expensive than the five issues put together, isn't it, sometimes?
Yeah.
So sometimes you're better off just buying the issue. Sometimes you're better off dying the digital, whatever you're going to do. But I really liked it. I'm going to stay on it. It is fortunately on Global Comics as well, so it's a place you can find it there. But Love Me issue one. There you go. It's my first one. That's my only one
Nice.
this
Nice.
yeah
My one this week is from Ablaze Comics. Now, this is a translation. Ablaze do quite a few of them, don't they? Because I know
I think that's how they do the Conan stuff.
Yeah, the
yeah.
Sumerian, isn't it? This is writer is Matthew Salvia. Artist is Jet. Letters Nathan Kempf. And they got a bunch of great covers as well. But this is The Boogeyman. Now, have you seen this? It is on
No.
Global
No.
Comics. There's six issues of this. This is my issue one though, and it is a great. It was I started with this. I'm recommending the issue one, but if like me. You'll read that, and then I just kept going. Over a couple of nights, I'd finished off all six issues of this series. The setup is passionate about reading. Elliot has always been drawn to the stories of boogeymen, those monstrous creatures which at night hide in the shadows or under the bed to frighten little children. He can't imagine how much they will change his life. Witnessing the bloody murder of his parents, he will discover that boogeymen do indeed exist, and very precise codes govern their existence. Now, I went into this thinking this is going to be about, like, you know, monsters under the bed, you know, probably. I mean, I'm coming off the afterglow of like Something's Killing the Children as well. Do you know what I mean? So that was kind of in my sort of zone at the time. What I got, which is a really pleasant surprise, it is a dark book. It's obviously not an all ages book because there is murder, and there is a child at the centre of this piece. But there's a boogeyman in it called Father Death, who then is in turn partly a protector in a sort of way. And it shows you what I didn't expect was to be introduced to a world that was actually bigger than I thought. I thought it was just going to be a standard person versus a monster kind of thing. You know, you get a title called The Boogeyman, you think, oh, this is what it's going to be, people trying to survive this particular creature.
Yeah.
And it's not. It introduces you to a universe of boogeymen, and they're the different styles, and they're from all over the world, and they're, maybe there's some internal politics between them and stuff. This is explored as the series goes on. The first issue was a great setup, and there are people who are almost, they follow boogeymen as well. They can get a little bit not possessed by them, but they do their sort of bidding. And there's these great scenes in the first issue that are set in the reign of this guy who just breaks into this house with a hammer. It doesn't. It's not too graphic. What I like about it is it's more like if someone, they save a lot of like the gruesome aspects for later in the series, but they're not really, these are more for the fantastical creatures. It feels like whenever something happens to real people, it's almost the aftermath, or a body is just kind of out of shot, if that makes sense.
Okay.
You know what's happened. So it's not graphic. It's a great sort of it gives me those sort of vibes of an Eastern sort of a manga kind of style, but not being manga. You know how some of those, I presume this is either a French or Spanish books, Spanish book, and a lot of those sort of books do have a lot of artists who are inspired definitely more from, less from Western comics and more to like animation and, you know, Japanese comics. So it's got that sort of kinetic feel to it. The colouring's lovely. It's really atmospheric, and it's genuinely a good story with some great sort of weird twisted characters. Like I say, it's six issues. I felt like there could be more of it, but it's almost like a one and done little tale as well. I think it says a lot about the universe building in it, that when it finished, I was kind of, I would like to see more of that. I'd like to see where this is going. It felt like telling a bit of a bigger story. So it was a real surprise, because like a lot of these things, you try an issue one and sometimes you think that, you know, this came out of nowhere, because I went into it, I will be completely honest, I went into it thinking it was going to be a dud. And before I knew it, I had finished off six issues. So you can read it on Global Comics, but it's a Blaze. I don't know where else you can get a Blaze comics from, or the print copies.
Diamond.
Yeah. So, you know, if you can get it in print or probably a trade and stuff, it'll be a good read. It's a real fun read. It also sort of, there are lingering effects of these monsters on the kid as well. You know, so it plays with a lot of, it's telling it almost like a nightmarish fairy tale meets horror in a nice kind of way. So the Boogeyman, and that is B-O-O-G-Y man.
Okay.
Now,
Isn't it normally EY?
It's usually EY, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is.
I wonder if that's the copyright from a movie.
Maybe.
But because of that, hopefully it's easy for you guys to find, because if you like sort of these dark, fantastical sort of tales like that with a little bit of horror flavour to it, this would be... I think a lot of our listeners will like this one, so check it out. Dan, what's yours?
Finally, this is a title previous guest, Tony Fleeks, gave us a heads up for, and I managed to get myself a print copy of it. It's Feral, issue one, so obviously written by Tony Fleeks. Artist Tone Rodriguez and Trish Forstner. A new horror from the creators of Stray. Meet Elsie, Lord Fluffy Britches, and Patch, three indoor cats lost in the not-so-great outdoors of a nightmarish rabies outbreak. Without the human to protect them, the cats rush to find their way home before they're eaten by a forest full of rabid beasts on their tails. Don't get bit, don't get scratched, don't become feral. It's a lot of the alternate and variant covers of this kind of homages to like Dawn of the Dead and Night of the Living Dead.
Stray Dogs. They had a lot of
I read this when he was on, because he stuck it in the chat, didn't he?
Essentially, for whatever reason, the three cats, the house cats, are being transported away in kind of like some kind of emergency response vehicle. So it kind of hints that there being some kind of pandemic that's affecting the animals, and there's a horrific car crash and the three of them are kind of lost in the wilderness, and it isn't long before they kind of come face to face with these rabid creatures that all kind of got the blood red eyes and just they're absolutely like kill murder crazy. And it's kind of the setup for the story of like how these characters are going to get home. What was that story they did with the dog and the two dogs and a cat? It was like The Great Adventure or something, Timo?
Homeward Bound.
Yeah, that's it.
Is that right?
Imagine sort of like that, but with kind of like zombies.
Mixing a little 28 Days Later kind of like horror. Yeah.
It's kind of the artwork is very reminiscent of like a Don Bluth style.
I loved it for Stray Dogs, and I think it's going to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, it works.
So,
well, I think it's doing really well, actually, I hear. Yeah.
It's going to do well, because like it's just the absolute craftsmanship in it. There's a double page spread at the beginning where the vehicle crashes, and it's like, oh, this is fucking lovely stuff. The before and after of the crash, and it sets up the stakes. It's all there, man. This is going to be a great comic, and I just, you know, kind of like when you pick up a comic, you just blitz through it. And it's like, oh, I'm at the end of it. It's just
I did that with it. Yeah.
It's just one of those. And it's like, oh, it's more of that, please. Yeah. It's great.
And it's a wonderful characterization. Like, you know, it's going to break your heart.
Oh, totally.
You get to know people who aren't going to make it. And that's, I mean, that's.
Even at the end of the first issue on this, it's like, okay, this character might not be around for too long then. It's already kind of.
Yeah.
You got that shortcut. It's kind of cute animals, and then straight away you're kind of you're finding them endearing, and it's like,
he's going to fuck with my emotions.
Emotional abuse coming up.
Absolutely did it with Stray Dogs, but did it well. Do you know what I mean? If they're going to really break your heart, then they've got to do it well, rather than just being a cheap pop. And so this should be more the same. But from heartbreak to hearts full of love, and we love you, lovely listeners, for listening to this week's episode. We hope you've enjoyed it. We certainly had a lot of fun talking about it.
Yeah, it's been a hell of a week.
And be sure to keep the conversation going on wherever you are in the world. Perhaps if you just you know someone who's listened to this episode, and you know you're in a coffee shop, just keep the conversation going. But if there's anything else,
talk to strangers at
just talk to people in the real world.
You think that girl is out of your league? She might not be if you talk to her about the Awesome Comics podcast.
Yeah. Did you listen to episode 460?
Then, she's takes her earphone out of the gym. Are you talking to me?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Oh, I see. You're still listening. Okay, I'll wait until you're finished.
Yeah. Wait till Vince says that thing about boobs.
Every week. But if there's anything that you want to, we've got some exciting stuff and some cool topics, etc. Some thought provoking topics. Some things to think about in the upcoming weeks, and some great guests lined up. But if there's anything else you want us to talk about, whether it be process, events, charity stuff as well, we're always about paying forward the good, because that's what this show's all about, actually doing something good for comics instead of all the shit you see everywhere else.
And Dan, who is definitely the son of Satan.
Yeah. Asmodeus. But you can email us if you want to talk about how Dan is the son of Satan. Then you can, there's several different ways you can get in touch with us. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Catch us on social media. On X, we're at the Awesome Pod.
On Instagram
at Awesome Comics Pod, where Dan might post a picture about how he just burned himself with a light he just pushed.
Fucking
extra.
Hot that lens. I put it under my chin, you know, when you get that up light effect. Yeah.
It doesn't work as well if all the other lights are on around you, Dan. You kind
or
of
if you're on fire.
This light is fucking strong. It's...
Yeah. Yeah. The bottom half of your face is very red now. Thank you for
listening. You know Dan's house number. Yeah, send an ambulance.
Yeah, yeah. If another way of keep the conversation going is join the Awesome Comics Podcast Slack community. There's a wonderful group of people on there. We say it every week, but the talk on there is always great.
I just muted it so that it doesn't flash up on my screen during the show.
I get notifications all the time on it.
20
now. No, I switch that off. I go on to just binge read it. Do you know what I mean? See what everyone's talking about and stuff, because it's great. Because otherwise, it's so active on there that I'd never see what's happening on my phone because the notifications would be
big
on
shout
there.
Out to the PXD who's just put something on there that made me laugh.
Yeah.
I've been in meetings with people at work because we use Slack, and they're like, I'm doing a screen share and showing something, and then something comes up in the bottom right hand corner. It's like, so and so said something on the rant channel. I'm like, fucking hell.
But there is as well as a rant channel, there's also general comics chat, podcast discussion, there's art threads. There's a feedback. If you're a creator and you want genuine. Not being hard, actual genuine feedback and critical
there's a lot
discussion.
Of that. Shout out to the guys who do that. Simon's a big really
Sam's
really. So I know Sam's just put a thing up about how does this logo work, and people. Yeah, I think it's great.
So it's a brilliant place to be. So get in touch with us. You can join that community, and that's available to everyone around the
Open
world. By the way,
everyone.
Open to everyone. We do not care, as long as you love comics and you want to have a wonderful safe space to talk about them, then you're welcome. So, where else can you find us? Well, you've probably listened to us, whether it be on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com, on the Podbean app, maybe on Apple Podcasts. If you listen to us there, then leave us a review. Give us a 5 stars. Tony's lost his mind. He just put a bowl on his head. And you can also find us on the other networks. You can review and leave comments on Spotify. And you may have listened to us on Amazon, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What are the networks are we on, Tony, as you lose your fucking mind in front of me?
Essay un taxi falso.
There you go. Un autogismo. any fast show fans out there might understand that link.
Boutros Ghali.
Boutros Ghali. Where can... I tell you what, that fucking show still holds up, man. Just watch clips.
I've subscribed to it on our Instagram. It keeps coming up. Amazing. Makes me fucking
so fucking, clips popping up. Yeah.
Fucking good stuff.
Making a comic is like making love to a woman.
Was that Dave Angel?
Yeah.
Dave Angel, Eco Warrior.
No, that's the, what's that one with Monkfish?
Make someone sitting there.
Yeah. pull your knickers up, love, put the kettle on.
Anyway, the environment.
Fucking. Fucking great. Literally, just Google it, people. It's the Fast Show is amazing. And as was this show. So where can people find us online, etc.? Tony?
NeverEndingThing.com.
Nice. Dan?
Nice little review of Clear Run 2 this week. Which
you fantastic. Nice. I've still yet to read my copy because it's a book.
Loved it. Loved it.
You can find me on Twitter, aka X, at Vanguard Comic. And you can read Vanguard at VanguardComic.com.
Which you should, because he's absolutely fucking
I've been a bit lax. I've been...
What you've only been making about three comics in a week?
Been under the cosh, man. Yeah, it's been a hard week.
Jesus Christ. He does more comics in his sleep than a lot of people do in their lifetime. Yeah. Anyway.
There's more with his ass.
Yeah, don't we know it. Thank God.
That's for the OnlyFans. So.
The only Dan.
You still only your only dance. Hey.
Yeah, look up.
No, don't look
of,
up
spawn
it.
Of the devil. Yeah. Damien Butcher. Yeah.
You can find me online on social media at Jester Diablo. Thank you very much for listening to this show. Thank you to Sue for joining us this
Cheers,
week.
Sue.
Talking and about Pat. Lawless and for Pat to give us that little insight. And we hope you all enjoyed it because we had fun talking about comics this week, as we do every week. So join us next week for more great comic banter. And probably a load of absolute nonsense around it, which will probably make you chuckle. And
almost
people will look at you in public weirdly as you laugh to yourself.
That's happened to me.
Yeah. And we will endeavour to do that again for you all. So until next week, when you hear our voices again, we hope you're enjoying making your comics and... whatever comics you're making, because we want to hear about them. Enjoying reading your comics, no matter what they are. And if you found a great comic that you love that more people need to know about,
tell us.
Tell us, tell your mates about it. Just, you know, recommend it, because that's how we spread the word. And wherever you are, we love you very much. Tony loves you very much.
No.
Don't you, Tony?
No.
Say it.
I don't.
Go on, say it.
Don't. Be fair, he doesn't, so there's no point.
Dan, don't ruin that. This is magic.
The man's got a bowl on his head.
That's true. Perhaps I shouldn't ask him. What I should do is make sure he's okay. And until next week, everyone, read loads of comics. Keep making loads of comics. And what's the other thing they've got to do, guys?
Stay awesome.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
See ya.
I like the way that you tip the hat.
That's polite, isn't it? It's polite.
Yeah. There you have it.
I fucked that up.
You just make noises just out of nowhere.
Look, he's looking innocent again. Look, Damien. He's got his Damien face on.
Yeah. Love it. Love it.